Welcome to the Go Hard Chick podcast. This is your host, Crystal Holmes. And today in episode 16, I bring you Understanding Infertility with Dr. Obehi Asimoda. Dr. Asimoda is the founder and medical director of Hope Fertility, which is a fertility clinic located in metropolitan Atlanta. I'm so honored that she joined me in this episode because although infertility was not something that I struggled with, it's always been something I've been curious about. And I learned from Dr. Asimoda in this podcast episode that 1 in 9 couples struggle with infertility, which was quite shocking for me to learn. So this episode is really important as we as women continue on with our wellness journey. You know, it's important that we, no matter where we are, whether we're not planning to have children right now or it's something we're planning in the future, it's really important that we really understand how infertility could be an issue that we may face and equipped ourselves with the knowledge that's necessary in, you know, in maintaining optimal health and wellness. So ladies, I'm super honored that Dr. Asimoda joined me today in this episode, and I hope you learn as much as you can. And we definitely are going to bring her back because there's so many layers to this topic. I mean, there's so many layers. So welcome to the Go Hard Chick podcast. Go Hard Chick, Dr. Obehi Asimoda. Welcome to the Go Hard Chick podcast, Dr. Asimoda. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks so much for having
me. Oh, thank you for joining us. And I'm super honored that you're here today because this is a topic that I've always been curious about. And honestly, a listener recently requested this topic. And I thought this would be a good idea to peel back some layers and get some better understanding about infertility. So I'm honored that you're here today to share your knowledge with us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Now, if you would, I always ask every guest, can you please just share with us a little bit about yourself, your background, what you do, and maybe why you do it?
Sure. I am an infertility, or I should say a fertility. It's always good to be positive. A fertility specialist based in the Metro Atlanta area. I own and I am the medical director of my own fertility clinic, Hope Fertility. And what I do, I really feel so blessed to be in this line of work, is I help people who are trying to conceive, people suffering from infertility, people from all walks of life. And it's a very, very common condition, infertility. It affects about 1 in 9 couples. So I help women, I help only women, just couples, I should say, who are trying to expand their family, because for some people, it's not easy. And I chose this line of work because initially when I did my training, when I thought I wanted to deliver babies, but then I was exposed to the field of infertility and I just fell in love with it. I fell in love with the science, how it's ever evolving. And I don't think it could get any better than helping a couple or an individual become a mother or have a baby. So I feel really blessed to do this line of work.
Oh, that is awesome. Now, you mentioned that infertility is relatively common. 1 in 9 couples. I did not realize it was that high.
It is. It is. Because a lot of people think, oh, you just, you know, when you have a baby, when you have a baby, you get pregnant. For some people, it's not easy. And there's a lot of misinformation about causes of infertility, and we could talk more about it, but it's actually fairly common. If you put 9 people in a room, chances are, if you've ever been to a party, if you've ever been to a convention, if you've ever been to a gathering, if there's more than 9 people, someone there is probably suffering from infertility. You just don't know about it.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Now, you also mentioned that it's not just a woman's issue. Men are affected as well?
Oh, definitely. A lot of things, I think there's a lot there are a lot of misconceptions about their about infertility. I think one of it is that it's a woman's issue, and that can be further from the truth. Sometimes, after evaluation, it could be that the infertility is caused by the male problem, maybe with the sperm, problem with producing sperm. So it's not just a woman's issue. It could be, right? So it could be a problem with a woman's fallopian tubes, right? Because that's sperm meat. Some women don't release eggs, what we call ovulatory problems. Some people have like diminished egg quantity, what we call diminished ovarian reserve. Definitely those are all women's issues, but it could have definitely affect males. Some males don't have enough sperm, or they have problems producing sperm, or they don't even have any sperm. So I think we could just say right off the bat, myth number one, infertility is not just a woman's disease or condition. It could affect solely the man, or the man could be also a contributing factor to the infertility.
Okay. Wow. Now you touched on some causes of infertility in women. What are some other things that could cause infertility in women?
So yeah, I spoke briefly about the tubes, about not releasing eggs in every month. But some women also have something called endometriosis. That's fairly common. That's where the lining of your uterus. So the lining of your uterus, like your womb, is made up of particular cells. And they're supposed to be right in your womb. But sometimes those cells grow in other places. It could grow in your ovary. It can grow in your bowel. That's a condition called endometriosis. That could be a contributing factor to infertility. While fibroids are not thought to be the sole cause of infertility, they could be a contributing factor. So fibroids could play a role in your fertility. And then again, the males, right? So tubes, your uterus, other conditions that could affect your pelvis, and the milk are all common causes of infertility. And then one thing I do want to say also is sometimes we could do the entire workup, right? And the workup consists of looking at everything that makes a baby. And sometimes we as specialists find nothing wrong. So there's definitely a subset of patients that have something called unexplained infertility, where we just don't know why, right? Everything seems to be normal. Everything seems to be working. But some couples still need help. So that's unexplained. So unexplained is also a category of infertility.
Okay. Interesting. So you mentioned, I'm just curious about this. You mentioned fibroids. How does that, I guess, prohibit or inhibit a woman from getting pregnant?
Right. So again, fibroids, not all fibroids cause infertility, because fibroids, especially in Black women, are very common. 90% of Black women have fibroids. But fibroids that are in the cavity, so these are fibroids that we call submucosal fibroids, could cause infertility. Some fibroids sometimes block the fallopian tubes. Again, the fallopian tubes are very, very important. Those could cause infertility. So while fibroids are common and a lot do not cause infertility, depending on where they are, they definitely could play a role in your fertility.
Okay. Now, what kinds of things increase a woman's risk for infertility? Like, does her health prior to trying to become, pregnant play a role, or could smoking or alcohol or some things like that play a role?
Yeah. This is an excellent question. And I would say probably the most common question, what makes me infertile, or what could make me more fertile, right? So I would say the number one is your age. Without a doubt, your age. Because as women, the older we get, the harder it is to get pregnant. So when you're older, and usually fertility starts to decline in your mid to late 30s, it's harder to get pregnant. So once you're ready, don't wait too long. I mean, it's hard to say, because some women, the time isn't right yet, or they haven't met their right partner. But it's worth considering other things like freezing your eggs, because I will say, as a woman, time doesn't wait for you. So I would say, is number one reason for why your fertility declines. Another cause is some things you mentioned. Smoking is a big no-no. Smoking could cause not only you to go into menopause earlier, but it could also damage your tubes. You see, I keep mentioning the tubes because that's very important. Smoking is no good for fertility. Alcohol, the reason why we say abstain from alcohol is because when it comes to alcohol, we don't know if one glass or two glasses are safe for pregnancy, right? Because a baby could have something called fetal alcohol syndrome if exposed to alcohol. So it's just best to abstain from alcohol if you're trying to conceive. And then there's your weight, right? So weight is also very important when it comes to fertility. Women who have excess weight, so if you're overweight or obese, or women who are underweight, what it could do is it could affect your monthly cycles, right? Because each month you're supposed to release an egg. So if you have excess weight or too little weight, that could make your cycles irregular. So it's very important to be in an optimal weight range when trying to conceive.
Okay. Well, what about something like stress?
Yeah, so stress is one of those things that it's hard to quantify, right? It's not like you can say this amount of stress. There's no way to quantify stress. But stress has not been shown to cause infertility. I mean, it definitely doesn't help your mood, but in terms of being a cause in infertility, it's not thought to be a known cause of infertility.
Okay. Now, you mentioned something that I found to be very interesting, because I had my first and only child a little later. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, I didn't have any fertility issues, but I do recall a close friend of mine at around that time having issues. And, you know, she spoke quite candidly to me, and she said, well, we should have frozen our eggs. And I was like, what? And like no one ever, or at least not my OB-GYN, but that was not something that was posed as an option to me. Like it wasn't something I even thought about. Now, my daughter's 9 now. Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering, is that something that is becoming more commonly discussed with women as an option?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And if it isn't, it should be. And I just want to say it's not a shoe-in that if you freeze your eggs, for sure you're going to have a baby. But it is an option to have. So, Crystal, you were lucky, right? You had your baby without much difficulty, sounds like. But your friend, not so much, right? So some women, they could have kids later. But a lot of women cannot. So if, like I think I mentioned before, if the time isn't right or you haven't met the right partner or whatever your reasons are, it is worth considering freezing your eggs if you don't plan to have children in the near future once you hit like your early to mid 30s, just because that's the time when your fertility starts to decline. So it's definitely something for all the listeners out there to discuss with your OBGYN or with your primary care, or better yet, a fertility specialist. Because some women, lucky you can have kids later, but some women it might be too late. So yes, egg freezing, which is also called social freezing, is definitely an option.
Now, let's say you're a couple and you've been trying and you haven't conceived. When should a woman or a couple seek help? At what point?
Yes. So anyone who is less than 35 who has been trying for a year would see a fertility specialist. So at least talk to your doctor about it. If you're over 35, though, and you've been trying for 6 months, by definition, you're infertile. So less than 35, a year. Over 35, 6 months, you should definitely start seeking help. There are certain conditions, though, that I would say you need to see a specialist sooner than later, where you don't have to keep towards those strict timeframes. For example, if you are a woman who doesn't have a cycle every month, right, you may want to see a fertility specialist sooner than later. If, for example, you know you have endometriosis just because it could affect your fertility, it's worth seeing a fertility specialist sooner.
Okay. Now, you mentioned if you're over age 35, what if you're a man? Is there an age range for men, or does it, that doesn't matter?
So for men, unfortunately, there really isn't an age range. It's really for women that we start to worry about egg quality and quantity over the age of 35. But for men, there's really no standard of when to, let's say, freeze your sperm, because men make sperm every 180 days till they die, because men don't go through, like, they don't run out of sperm, whereas women, we go through the menopause at age 51 on average. So men, it doesn't seem fair, but unfortunately that's life. There's no like age limit to worry per se.
Okay. So once a couple or a woman comes to you, what kinds of things do you do or tests do you run to diagnose, infertility or what could possibly be going on?
Yeah, so I'm actually going to write a blog about this. I'm so glad you brought this up, Crystal. Like, what can you expect when you see a fertility specialist? So I really applaud you for bringing this up. What you can expect and is just basically a full history, like how long have you been trying, medical history, surgical history, because all of that could play a role in your fertility status. And then a physical exam and sometimes an ultrasound to look at the uterus, look at the ovaries, and then the basic fertility workup. What that entails is blood tests, checking for egg quantity. So this is like AMH, your day three lab, which is estradiol. And then there's also assessment of the fallopian tube. So that is through a test called hysterosalpingogram, also called an HSG. Okay. And then lastly, let's not forget the male counterpart. If you have a male partner, is very important. So a semen analysis. So a basic workup when you see a fertility specialist is to think of it as looking at four parts: the uterus, looking at the ovaries, so the egg quantity, the semen analysis, and then the fallopian tube. So that's basically what you can expect for initial workup.
Okay. Okay. And once you get that initial workup and you as the doctor, I guess, are able to come to some findings, I guess, if you will.
Right.
What treatment options are available?
Yeah. So it all depends on what the evaluation showed. Right. So there's a plethora of treatment options, a lot of treatment options out there. Some of it might not even entail taking any fertility medications. It could be just you need surgery. Let's say there's a big fibroid that is causing pain and looks like it's blocking the tubes or ovaries. Sometimes surgery could be, repair your infertility. Let's say there is a problem and it warrants fertility treatment. So some of the treatments include taking a fertility pill. Some of it entails taking fertility shots, right? And that can be combined with treatments such as IUI, which stands for intrauterine insemination, or even something as advanced and effective as in vitro fertilization, also known as IVF. So depending on the condition, depending on what is found, treatment can range anywhere from surgery, fertility pills, fertility shots, in combination with IUI or IVF.
Okay. Wow. All right. So if I'm just going to say someone has to take fertility shots, what or how long does that treatment typically last before someone should expect some results? Or is that hard to say?
Depends on the condition. Let's say you're taking fertility shots, and most times the fertility shots are combined with either IUI, insemination, or IVF. So if you're taking the shots, usually you take shots for about, I would say, 10 to 14 days, okay? And then if you're doing insemination, the insemination takes place. So just to insemination is where we put the sperm in the uterus through a catheter. Pregnancy test, if it works, takes place is it 2 weeks later, right? But if you're doing something as advanced as IVF, right, where you take shots for 10 to 14 days, in vitro fertilization involves taking the eggs out of the woman, okay, mixing the eggs and the sperm to create an embryo, and the embryo is placed inside the uterus. That process is a little bit longer. That takes about, I would say, anywhere from 20 days to a month and a half, depending on what else is done. So results could be fast. It's just the process, the planning takes a little bit more time.
Okay. And is that where, and I apologize for my ignorance if I don't have the right terminology, but if someone is getting the shots, they're doing this themselves at home?
Yes. Either, yes, some people, their spouses do it for them, but typically you take shots by yourself at home, correct?
Okay. Now, let's say you go through the full, I don't know, 21 days or so, or whatever it may be. What if no pregnancy occurs? Do they start over?
Typically, yes. As long as the patient feels well, they're not having any symptoms, because sometimes these shots could cause some side effects. You can start over as long as you're cleared the following cycle.
Okay. And just curious, what types of side effects do the shots sometimes cause?
The shots could cause some nausea, some vomiting, some abdominal bloating. One side effects from the shots, and I would say from IVF, is something called hyperstimulation, OHSS. So that's where you could have more severe symptoms, more bloating, more nausea, more vomiting, which is why when you're taking shots or doing fertility treatment, you really should see someone who's specialized in this. But those are typical examples of taking fertility shots. And then, you know, depending on one side effect, for example, if you're doing shots and insemination, is you could have, there's an increased risk of having multiples. So twins, triplets. So you really should go to a doctor who is trained to do this, because sometimes you can end up with too many babies if you're not careful.
Okay, I was going to ask about multiple babies.
Right.
So how can that be, I guess, monitored or limited, if you will?
Right. So the biggest way to avoid multiples, let me start with IVF. Control how many we put in is to put a single embryo. So remember, the embryo is the fertilized egg. So putting a single embryo greatly, greatly reduces the chance of having multiples, right? There's only about a 1% chance of an embryo splitting. But if you put more than one, that increases your chance of twins. If you're doing shots and insemination, again, there's less control of that. So it's important if they're, let's say you're taking the shots and then it looks like, wow, you're going to release all these eggs. It's prudent. It's important to maybe just cancel that cycle, because while it sounds nice to have triplets, you know, it could come with complications. So the complications of multiples, sometimes they come too early. They could have developmental problems, breathing problems, problems with the mother too. So the biggest, I would say, way to prevent multiples is prevention. So put only one embryo in. When taking shots, if you're growing too many, just cancel the cycle. So prevention is key.
When you say cancel the cycle, what does that mean?
So for IVF, right, we can control how many embryos we put in, right? But for something like insemination, where you're just injecting the sperm, let's say you start taking the shots and you are having multiple follicles. The follicle is the house of the egg, right? Let's say it looks like you're going to release 4 to 5 eggs. Best to cancel. Best not to have sex, because you could release all of those 4 to 5 eggs and you can end up with multiple babies. That's what I mean by cancel.
Okay. Okay. So I wanted to swing back, because you mentioned that surgery is a treatment option, mm-hmm. for example, maybe if someone has fibroids.
Mm-hmm. Or even damaged tubes. Sometimes tubes could be repaired.
Ah, mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, then that brings me to another question. Why would someone's tubes be damaged?
So some women have had pelvic infections, for example, a history of like gonorrhea and chlamydia, that could damage your tubes, a history of prior pelvic surgery. that could damage your tubes, a history of an ectopic pregnancy. So that's a pregnancy that's not in your uterus, but a pregnancy that's in your fallopian tube. That could also damage your tubes. So sometimes the tubes cannot be saved, right? They have to be taken out. And in that case, you have to do in vitro fertilization. But there are certain situations where a tube can be repaired. A tube could be opened up if it's closed up. That could lead to a successful pregnancy.
Now, if someone is able to have surgery to repair a tube, for example, I assume that there's some downtime that they need to let their body heal from that surgery.
Correct. There is some downtime, depending on the extent of the surgery, the way the surgery is done, because sometimes the surgery could be done minimally invasively. What that means is instead of like a C-section scar, they can do tiny incisions where they use little tools to repair the tubes. Downtime could be a lot less than if they do a large scar where it could be months and months before they could try and achieve pregnancy on their own.
Okay, so the goal is, I guess, after such a surgery is for them to heal and then try to become pregnant on their own.
Correct, if it's successful.
Okay, and I'm assuming if they've tried on their own after maybe 6 months or whatever the period is, a year, they come back to you.
Correct. So if, let's say, because I've had patients who've had for example, some women have tied their tubes, right? Because they thought they were done with, and they put it back together, right? But it doesn't work. And they come to me and then I say, okay, since you've done the surgery, you've tried on your own, it's not working, let's do IVF.
See, I didn't even think about people getting their tubes tied and then later wanting to have another child.
Right, yeah. Because some people think they're done and they're like, actually, we're not done. And then some people enter new relationships. So these are all situations, all scenarios that I have seen where people change their mind or people enter new relationships.
So then I have another question. What is the, I guess, success rate of trying to, I guess, repair a tube after someone has their tubes tied?
That really depends on, I would say, the expertise of the surgeon, right? Because some surgeons are very trained to do this. And also depends on the age of the woman, too. So it really depends on the surgeon and depends on the age of the woman. Because I would say it would be case by case.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, what typically, and would that be your answer, case by case for, I guess, fertility treatments overall regarding the success rates?
Well, I could, for like IVF, for example, in vitro fertilization, success rate is based on age. I mean, definitely there are other factors. But typically for a woman less than 35, I would say success rate IVF is about 45 to 50, sometimes even 55%, depending on what is causing the infertility. 35 to 37, safe to say a woman, if it's like, let's say something like tubal factor, like let's say she tied her tubes, right, when she was younger, probably success is about 40-45%. And I will say one caveat I would say is, every clinic has their own success rate. So I'm just quoting like the national data. But less than 35, about 50, 55, 35 to 37, about 40, 45%. And then anyone like 38 and older, about 30, 35%.
Okay. Now you mentioned a good point. You said every clinic has their own success rate. Is this something that folks should be asking when they meet with an infertility doctor or clinic?
Yes, I would say it's worth having a discussion, not only on success rate, but also, have you dealt with my kind of case? Because every clinic is unique. Every clinic has a different style. Ask about the physician's comfort level, success rates. Because even though there's a national database on success rate, it's important to talk to your clinic about your particular case.
Okay. Now, let's say someone is successful and they get pregnant. Do you continue to work with them, maybe along with their OBGYN, or once they get to pregnancy, you kind of, you're done.
Don't sound so final. I like to say I graduate them. Typically, okay. Anywhere from 7 to 10 weeks. I don't go, Krista, okay, bye. No, no. What we do is we say, okay, our work here is done. Wish you a lot of success. Please keep in touch. But yes, we do graduate them to their OBGYN for obstetric care.
Okay.
I just want to say we love the baby bump pictures and pictures of the babies. I always love connecting with my patients afterwards.
Well, and I'm sure you probably get a lot of pictures and thank yous, yes, and everything.
It's the best part of the job, without a doubt.
Right. So are there any risks to the parent or the baby with these procedures?
So for IUI, no, there hasn't been, so insemination, there hasn't been shown to be any data that's causing any risk to mom and baby. For IVF, there is some information that sometimes the babies are born a little earlier than normal. Depending on what procedure is used, there is a chance that there could be some birth defects. It's hard to say if it's because of the infertility or if it's because of doing a certain type of procedure. And then there's also a thought that sometimes the placenta could be affected when doing certain types of IVF. So there are certain risks. That's why it's important to have a thorough discussion with your doctor regarding risk and benefits of doing certain fertility treatments. So that's also a very big one.
Okay. Now, when someone comes in or a couple comes in to see you, treatment-wise, what type of time commitment should they expect? I mean, I imagine this is something that they're going to have to be willing sometimes to take off from work or whatever it may be.
Right. So it depends on the treatments, because some people come in and they haven't done anything at all, right? I would say typically a workup takes a month, and treatment, depending on what you do, IUI or IVF could take an additional month or a month and a half. But some other couples have had a basic workup, like the workup I talked about, already done by their primary care or by their primary OBGYN, and they're ready for treatment right away. So it all depends on, one, if they've done anything at all, or two, the type of treatment. But there is some commitment, and it's also very important to talk to the patient. Okay, what can I expect in terms of time commitment in getting this fertility treatment?
Now, I have a question about the men. Are they, and it could vary from man to man, I just could see men not being very open and receptive to participating in treatment, or maybe in denial that maybe they could have the issue.
Some are, for sure. Some are. And sometimes it does take me, I'll say from my experience, talking to the men to participate. And usually the way I like to put it is like, look, your partner has done this. She's done all the blood work. She's had her tubes tested. She's done all this ultrasound. And, you know, we're just waiting on you, right? Because it takes two. And a lot of people come around, but some, not all. Some men, it does take a little counseling that, okay, you've checked your partner. It's time for you. You're all that's missing, right? We just need to make sure all parts are working to see what's going on. And I would say the majority of men come around like, okay, you know, my partner has done all of this. I do need to do my part in participating in workup and treatment.
And what type of workup is conducted regarding the men?
Semen analysis. So basically they have to ejaculate into a cup, and we look at the sperm. We look at the amount of sperm, so the concentration of the sperm, the movement of the sperm, what we call the motility. And we also look at the sperm to see if it's normal. But the workup of the males is a semen analysis. And depending on what we find, sometimes that's all we need, right? But sometimes, for example, if we find abnormalities, I may have to refer them to a fertility specialist, what we call a urologist, a fertility urologist, for further workup and treatment.
Okay. What could cause, I guess, issues with their sperm?
Yeah. So there's a, sometimes we tend to group sperm in, like, could it be caused by problems, like hormonal problems, just like women have hormonal problems. Sometimes men have hormonal problems. Could it be a problem with the sperm production, like a problem with their testes? And sometimes there might not be a problem in producing sperm, but there could be a problem ejaculating sperm. So once a problem is identified, it's best to see like a fertility urologist, the one who do the workup and treatment.
Okay. And could they have causes of some of the, these issues with their sperm? Could that also be caused by things by, you mentioned with women, for example, being overweight or smoking?
Yep. Sometimes, yes. Sometimes that could contribute to that for sure.
Okay. Okay. Now, just out of curiosity, I'm guessing there are probably times where some women or men come to you and they don't want to take shots or they don't want surgery or whatever it may be. Are there non-medical approaches that folks could try to undertake to improve their chances of getting pregnant?
For sure. Like we had mentioned, like healthy lifestyle, right? Because for some women, if you have not enough weight on you or too much weight, right? I even tell some women, if you just lose a certain percentage of your body weight, your cycles could resume. You could get pregnant on your own where you don't even need me, right? So for some women, just getting into an optimal weight range could make them more fertile, right? Trying to lead a healthy lifestyle, so avoiding smoking could also, well, it wouldn't definitely reverse your infertility, but it wouldn't worsen it, to let's say. And then other things such as, for example, getting control of your diabetes, because sometimes a woman who's diabetic, if their diabetes is out of control, it may not make you infertile, but it could cause recurrent miscarriages. That could make you carry a baby to a term as opposed to having miscarriages. So there are certain things that, okay, you may not need me, you just need to lose weight, or actually what you're telling me, you're not having sex enough, could make you get pregnant. So there are definitely certain things that could make you conceive spontaneously without a fertility aid, that could make you get pregnant naturally.
Ah, okay. So, and you mentioned this before too, you said, you know, if you're not having regular cycles, what is considered, I guess, irregular?
So a regular cycle is anything from 21 to 35 days. If your cycles are shorter than that or cycles longer than that, that's not normal. So anyone whose cycle is, if you say you get a cycle every 3 months, every 4 months, that is not normal. You need to see a fertility specialist to talk about that if you're trying to get pregnant. If your cycles are too short, you also need to see a fertility specialist.
Okay. Now, could, let's say someone's been using whatever birth control method for a number of years or however long, could birth control cause someone to have fertility issues?
So that's also a very common myth. It does not. Sometimes it masks, it could mask, let's say, you not having regular cycles or you going through an early menopause, but it does not in and of itself cause you to be infertile or have irregular cycles. So birth control does not cause infertility, for sure. That we know.
Okay. Okay, that's some good information. Now, you mentioned like one myth at the beginning of our conversation, and this was, what are some other myths that people believe about fertility or infertility?
Fertility positions. That's probably a favorite of mine. Like, oh, after I have sex, you should raise your leg up, or certain positions will lead to a boy or a girl. No, that's a myth. Or eating certain foods. Myth. What else do I hear? And there's some very good ones out there. Like birth control does not lead to infertility. Your position doesn't matter in terms of trying to get pregnant or trying to get a certain gender. Eating pineapple core, that I think is a myth. But you know, it's a fruit. So I always tell my patients, it doesn't cause any harm, but it might not make you more fertile, right? But if you want to eat all the pineapple or yams or whatever, go ahead. So those are certain myths. And that, that fertility is a, infertility is a woman's problem. That's another myth out there. That's not true, like we discussed. And then another myth I see is, because I had a patient who I saw recently, and, oh, once you see me, I do IVF for everybody. That's a myth. There's a lot of options out there. Surgery, fertility pills, or even just coaching, right? I've definitely just coached people, like, this is what you need to do to get pregnant, where I didn't even do anything to help them get pregnant. So, you know, I would say education from the right source is key.
Now, one question, because you mentioned treatment, how, and I don't know if you have an answer for this, it could be based on an individual basis, but let's say someone's doing IVF or whatever treatment, and they, how long before you tell them, let's stop?
One. Because there's always, and always, the way I like to put it, Christelle, is not necessarily stop, but let's pivot, right?
Okay.
So, for example, let's say someone has been doing a certain types of treatment that's not working, right? What I'll tell them is, let's try this instead. Right. This instead could be, okay, it's time to move from IUI to, or let's say they've done certain types of IVF, it's not working. Okay, let's start considering maybe using a donor egg or using a gestational carrier. So I don't necessarily tell you to stop, but I usually say let's pivot, because if you want a baby, right, you will have a baby. It just might not be in the way you envision, if that makes sense.
Right, right.
So I always tell people, not necessarily stop, let's pivot. Let's do something else.
Now that brings me to another question, Doctor. You mentioned donor eggs. So you're directly involved in that process of, okay, how does that work?
So donor eggs, you know, it's for a lot of reasons, right? It's not for, I mean, a lot of women can have babies using their egg, but for a certain populations, for certain patients, you know, using your own eggs may not be viable. So donor eggs is essentially where you get eggs from a younger woman, and it's inseminated either with your partner's sperm or your donor's sperm, and the embryo, remember the embryo is the fertilized egg, is implanted inside you or in a carrier. And a donor egg, you can purchase the egg from a bank, an egg bank, or from a fresh donor, essentially.
And fresh donor, does that mean like someone you may know, or?
It could be. It could be someone you know, or it could be someone you don't know, what we call an anonymous egg donor.
Okay, I see. I see. Wow. This is a lot of information.
It is. It's a lot of information, but I'm slightly biased, but it's great information. Always good. That's why I always tell patients, you know, you have to, there's always hope, right? Because it's very, very distressing and could be emotionally draining when fertility treatments don't work. But, you know, there's just things we can pivot to, like donor egg or gestational carrier, or, you know, let's move on from IUI to IVF. So it's a lot of information, but there's always hope. That's how I feel. There's always hope out there.
And that's why your office is called Hope Fertility.
Yeah, that's why it's called Hope Fertility. Exactly.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Asimoto. I really appreciate this. This is super informative.
Oh, thank you so much. It was such a pleasure being here. Thank you so much for having me, Chris. And I would love to come back.
Yes, I feel like we've only scratched the surface. I have so many more questions, but I got to respect your time. But I would love you to come back to maybe talk about like one treatment, maybe in particular or something. That would be awesome.
That's so funny you said that. I was just about to say, I could talk for hours about one topic. All of those things I mentioned, I could dedicate a whole session to one topic. Let's say egg donor. We could talk for egg donation for hours, right?
Oh, wow.
So I would love to come back if the opportunity arises.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. Now, can you please tell the listeners, if they want to reach out to you, maybe, you know, come see you, maybe they're having fertility problems, how can they find you? How can they reach you?
Sure. So my clinic, Hope Fertility, is in the Metro Atlanta. My site is www.hope-fertility.com. I'm also on Instagram at Dr. Obesa. And my office number is 404-410-5055. I would love to meet anyone interested in talking about fertility or even seeking fertility treatment.
Thank you so much, Dr. Asimoto. I really appreciate it. Thank you for coming on today.
Oh, thank you for having me, Crystal.
Absolutely. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Well, there you have it. I really enjoyed this episode with Dr. Asimoto, and I had so many more questions to ask, so I have to bring her back, most definitely. And if you listen to this episode and you have questions that you would like me to ask next go around, please, please send me a DM or an email and let me know. Once again, Go Hard Chicks, thank you for listening. I sincerely appreciate all of your continued support as I continue on with this podcast journey. I truly, truly enjoy speaking with the guests and bringing this content to you. This is my mission to help us all live healthier and fuller lives. If you enjoyed this episode or any episode, once again, please leave a rating and review. Doing so really helps me to continue to bring on guests like Dr. Asimoto and some of the other great guests that we have had on during this journey. Thank you for listening. Take care.